This is a More Than Just Podcast production.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the More Than Just Code podcast. My name is Tim Mitra. I am in Toronto, Ontario, and I'm joined today by the folks who build Skip, Skip Tools. We have Mark Prudomo in Boston, Massachusetts, and we have Abe White down in Houston, Texas. So welcome. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, so I just want to give you a bit of background. So I had heard about Skip about maybe, I don't know, a few months ago, I believe one of you gentlemen emailed me a bit a while ago, before Christmas anyway. And, you know, obviously intrigued by different tools. I've played around with Flutter, played around with React. I am working on a project that is Flutter app that's multiple platforms. So obviously when Skip came along, I'd rather do things in Swift, to be honest with you. So, quite good. So then I took it for test run. I'm currently working on an app right now that's at the very early stages. Perfect time to do that. And you know, with in North America, we like to think iOS is the be all and end all. But you know, the truth is, in the world, Android is the platform of choice. So I think your tool comes along, and you know, for those of us who are working on iOS, I think it's a perfect solution.
Certainly we think so. That's sort of the background that we come from, and I'm sure we'll explore that in more detail. But most recently, we've been doing primarily iOS work, and we agree with you that sort of the Western world is more iOS centric, and that's typically where apps are developed first. Even in our experience in larger organizations that target both platforms, people tend to design and build for iOS first. So we think that's really the right thing to do if you're following the money in the Western world. But if you leave out Android, you are missing sort of the rest of the world and the other, you know, almost half of your audience in the Western world as well. So we do believe in sort of an iOS first development model, but we think it's really valuable to target Android at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, but it's also the holy grail too. I think, you know, even going back to the definition of Java, where the build it once and run it on many, never really saw any kind of fruitful thing like from it. And I think one of the things that, you know, like I can put on my little Apple hat on and listen or imagine them saying, well, it degrades the performance or it degrades the experience. So what do you, I mean, I hate to throw that at you right away, but what do you think about the product once it's created, you know, obviously I think created better in a better environment using Swift and Xcode, but what do you think about the cross-platform parity and that kind of stuff that you're getting out of your product?
That's really the, you know, overarching goal, the holy grail, as you say, the end product that the user gets in their hand, right? And we really come at it from the perspective of, you know, building for iOS, the absolute best user experience, the premium user experience comes from using the native tools. And that's something that really cross-platform frameworks just cannot quite cross that threshold of the premium user experience. So, you know, where we come from is how can we take that user experience and how can we enable the developer to use these modern tools that they are already familiar with to develop iPhone apps and be able to essentially just overlay that onto Android. And on the Android side, create the equivalent premium experience for Android apps, which, you know, currently is the Jetpack Compose, relatively new framework available for Android.
Yeah, and I mean, I should tell you too, I come from a banking background where the idea, we had separate teams. We had an Android team and we had an iOS team, and we would release in parity. So, you know, we would, they would design for a sort of a generic experience or a look and feel, and then we would have to, you know, tailor each of the platforms on its merits or, you know, design, like material versus, you know, Xcode kind of design. But the thing was, at the end of the day, you might be using like an iOS phone at work. When you go home to do your banking at home, you're using an Android device. So for us, it was very important that we had feature parity, right? And I think that's what I've seen in my 2.5 days of experience with Skip. That seems to be where you guys are going, right?
Yeah, and just to back up for a second and give your users a little bit of background about Skip's model of development.
Sure.
Is not only are you using sort of Xcode and Swift and Swift UI, but those are just building natively for the iPhone. So your end product on the iPhone is sort of untouched by Skip. It's just a normal Swift and Swift UI app. And on the Android side, what we do is we translate that into a Kotlin and Jetpack Compose app. So that turns into also a native Android experience. So you don't get that sort of lowest common denominator or sort of tries to feel native but isn't quite native experience that you get with a lot of cross-platform tools. Our idea is that you want native experiences on both platforms. And that's where we're coming from. Speaking to your experience in the banking world and developing in Parity, my recent background was at Twitter, where we did the same thing, where we wanted to release at the same time with the same features, and we had two separate teams duplicating all that work. What I referred to earlier, though, is that what I saw anyway is that we still sort of designed for iOS first, just because most of the designers tended to have more experience there, and it was sort of the more important platform in terms of audience in the Western world. So that's sort of what I've seen experience-wise. Same with my experience at other companies is you want a similar experience on both platforms, but really the designs tend to kind of be more iOS-y than they are Android-y.
Right. And I mean, I think it's probably maybe important to sort of step through the process. I'll give you my outsider view of it. So we're not, you know, opening up the kimono too bit too wide. But so what I experienced was in looking at your demos and running it is, you know, for those of you driving at home, you install Xcode, you install Android Studio, you install Homebrew, and then the way it works is you download the Skip tools, and then you build your iOS app in using Skip. You run it, you do an initialization using Skip tools, and it creates an environment where you have a Darwin version, which is iOS, and you have an Android version, which is obviously Kotlin. And yeah, right away it seems to just run out of the box. I did have a few issues, but we'll talk about that off camera. And I believe, like you said, you end up with a natively running, when you do a build, it opens up in the simulator. It also opens up on, what do you call those virtual machines, right? On the Android
side?
The Android emulator, yeah.
So that's the general gist of it. And I think you mentioned in the intro videos, you can go into the Android code and tweak things if you need to.
Yeah, we have various ways of sort of influencing Skip's output. So you can do things on the Swift side, adding special comments or sort of embedding compiler directives to influence what Kotlin is being generated, and that's how you would do that. Or you can just sort of throw in Kotlin files into your project, which obviously will not become part of the iOS build, but which get built into the Android part. And you can also just open the whole thing at any time in Android Studio if you want to, and sort of play around there, and that's a good way to develop those Kotlin files interfacing, you know, with the rest of the system and the generated Kotlin.
Yeah, and I don't know if this is valid or not, but my experience with the Flutter side was that, you know, you build everything in using the Flutter tools and you kind of push out to Android and iOS, and you don't really have something you can touch after the fact. Like, you can't go in and put something unique into the iOS part that doesn't go into the Android part. And I think, yeah, they're just for, you know, technical point of view, there's like a I think it's a pound skip directive. If skip, then if it's something skip can handle, you can do this, but you can encapsulate something so that, you know, if you have a framework that's not compatible or cross, you call it transpilable, I think. If it's not transpilable to the Android side, you can put in a Kotlin version of it in the Swift project, and then when it builds out the correct using the right framework or whatever, right?
Yeah, that's right, and that's really our primary mechanism for integrating with, you know, native Kotlin APIs, for which we don't have any, you know, particular Skip framework or Skip implementation in one of our core frameworks. You know, and that's a really big selling point for us, because if you, you know, have, as you mentioned in Flutter and also in other frameworks like React Native and Xamarin, in order to integrate with the system APIs, you need to go through this whole cumbersome bridge building process, which is always, you know, some special set of tools and frameworks and things like that. And then in those, what you wind up doing is on the iOS side, implementing it usually in Objective-C because they're sort of legacy, but I think more recently, sometimes Swift.
Right.
And then on the Android side, doing the same thing in Java or in Kotlin, and then bringing them together with some bridge API. And then you bundle that up, you link to it with your Flutter React Native app, and then all of a sudden you can access these APIs. With Skip, it's a lot simpler because, you know, it is pure unmediated Swift on the iOS side. So you can just call anything that's available to you. You can have, you know, any of the Apple frameworks, or you can have any Swift package manager dependencies, and you can just do it. There's no special things you need to do. Skip doesn't even know about it. And then on the Android and Kotlin side, what you do is, as you mentioned, you have these if-skip blocks. And then you can just call any Kotlin or Java APIs directly from within those blocks. Those get, you know, removed just automatically by the, you know, Xcode compilation process for iOS, because of course nothing would happen there. There's no JVM, there's no Android APIs. But on the Android side, you can call, you know, any system frameworks. And in addition, you can add any third-party dependencies via the, you know, Gradle Maven system, which is sort of a world unto itself, but we have a pretty simple mechanism for saying, like, I want to have a dependency on, say, the Android Media 3 Exo Player, which is the equivalent of AVKit on iOS. You can add that as a dependency, and then on the Android side, we'll automatically get that dependency, and then you can invoke whatever you want. And that's basically how our Skip AV framework lets you have a video player that works the same way on both platforms.
Yeah, and as I said before, I think in your demo videos, there's a, you know, the straightforward build it in Swift starting from scratch, and you have a demo. Abe does a demo on how to take an existing app and modify it to work within Skip. And but I did try a few of my apps that I'm working on, and I want one that, like, I'm curious from the point of view of, like, I know not every framework is supported or supportable, I guess. So things like Swift Data, any of the camera frameworks, do those have trouble in Skip at this point, or?
We don't currently have a Swift Data equivalent, so we have some lower level mechanisms like Skip SQL that allows you to integrate directly with SQLite on both, you know, iOS and on Android. Similarly, we do have the beginnings of an AV kit. I don't think we have any advanced camera integration, but we do have a mechanism for basically bringing up the equivalent. I can't remember what the view controller is called, but the one where it just says present a camera interface, take a photo, and then get the image back. We do have that in another framework called SkipKit. So we do have a wide variety of the more commonly available frameworks, both the things that are available for Apple, but also third-party frameworks like Firebase and Supabase and Lottie for Lottie Animations, which is a common animation format that people like, and, you know, sort of a wide variety of the popular tools that people can use. And these are all open source. And also, there's nothing preventing you from creating your own framework with integration points, which people have started doing a lot more in recent weeks and months.
Yeah, I notice you call out for people to contribute too. Are you getting a lot of feedback from the iOS community in terms of building the app?
Yeah, we've been really happy. I was going to mention that in terms of, you know, user spun up framework, someone re-implemented all of the core Bluetooth APIs, you know, on top of Android, so that you can directly code to the iOS core Bluetooth API and it'll work on Android as well, which is pretty cool.
Nice.
We've gotten a lot of contributions to Firebase because that seems to be a popular one. AV Player, some of the things Mark mentioned were user contributed. So yeah, we've been really pleased with that. And I think that's partly due to the fact that we did try to make it so easy to just be able to say, like, you know, if Skip or if OS Android, do this, and you can just code right in line. Otherwise, if you're on iOS, you know, do this other thing, and to sort of bundle that up all behind a common API, if you'd like.
So, how are you finding, like, the adoption of Skip tools in general? Like, how successful have you been? How many apps are there out on the App Store that you know of, and that kind of thing?
It's been going really well so far. There's quite a lot of people, a very active Slack community, seems to be growing considerably every day. Things have really picked up recently. There's no requirement that you report to us whether or not you are using Skip in your app. So we don't have a hard count that we can basically say, but we have started assembling on our news page, a list of the apps that people have told us about and sort of show and tell, things like that. So we have a bunch of apps that are on there, and those are expanding every day. So overall, we've been pretty happy with it. Especially considering we're up against, some gigantic, well-entrenched sort of legacy, cross-platform frameworks, that a lot of people sort of look to as their first, option.
Yeah, it is funny to see on Slack, someone will, that we, we've never heard from before, will suddenly ask some deep technical question that makes it clear that they're developing a large app that we just have no clue about. And we might never hear from them again. It might just go to the store and we don't actually know. So we have, though, as Mark mentioned, started to feature a few that we do know about.
Mm-hmm. So let's take a step back. Give me the origins of how you came to... I know you both worked in iOS, but how did you come up with this idea, or how did you approach it? Like, Abe, you mentioned multiple teams at Twitter as well, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what's the origin story of Skip in general?
Well, to go way, way back to prehistory, Abe and I have been working together in various forms since, 1999. Back in 2008, when the App Store first basically became available, when the APIs were first published, we actually got together and we created the first ebook reader for the iPhone called Stanza. And that was really when we started working together. And this was very early primitive, days. This was Objective-C using UI View. There was no interface builder. So we really cut our teeth on the most bare bones iOS experience. And one interesting thing about that particular project, which wound up sort of, really blowing up and having millions of users, is that before we started on the iOS version, we actually had the prototype as an Android version using the pre-release of the Android toolkit. And that was all, again, very sort of caveman-like tools available for developing on Android. And ultimately, we're looking them side by side and it's like, well, the iOS experience is just really better and this is going to be a big deal. So we basically put all our effort into the iOS version. And then despite many people over the years saying, can we have an Android version too? We had gone down that one route, and then the idea of just rewriting it from scratch was way too big for a small team like us. But that was sort of one of the earliest, glimmers we had of wow, wouldn't it be nice to be able to do these things on both platforms? And then, over the years, Abe and I sort of went our separate ways. Abe went on to Twitter. I did a variety of consulting and contracting. I worked on a bunch of iOS projects, big and small, some for New York Times Cooking and Bose app and things like that, but also a bunch of sort of initial run projects. And time again, I encountered either the Twitter situation where you have two parallel teams that need to maintain feature parity and just the coordination overhead is utterly massive. You have an app that maybe, a single small team could maintain on one platform, turning into an app that two very large teams need to maintain with very slow velocity on two platforms. And it just becomes an impossible thing for small communities. There's either that, or I would see, sort of greenfield apps made by startups and things like that, that it would help out with, who would sort of say, have on their to-do list, often fairly far down, is Android version. Mm. And then eventually you get to that and they're saying, well, what do we do now? And it's well, I guess you either rewrite it, a second time, or throw the whole iOS side away and rewrite the entire thing in some cross-platform framework, Flutter, React Native, Xamarin, any of those, and then accept, essentially the reduction in the user experience on the iOS side. And people would take one or the other of those options in many of these projects. So we both sort of have observed the same kind of phenomena around the struggle to achieve this. And then, over the years, Abe and I have collaborated together on and off, usually on just sort of interesting little side projects or frameworks or things that kind of took our fancy. And this particular one evolved out of somewhat unrelated project where we were thinking we could have server-side implementations of Swift UI views that get sent down from the server, so basically server-driven components. You know, we sort of had sketched out something on there, and it's like, wow, we can really take the same idea, and instead of doing that, we can work on transpiling this code over to Kotlin. So that was a sort of a whole long evolution, but that was kind of how that came about a couple of years ago.
So do you think it's the benefit of Jetpack Compose and Kotlin being so close to Swift in that sense?
Yeah, definitely. You know, a lot of, you know, iOS-oriented developers don't necessarily know all that much about, you know, Kotlin and Java and the various frameworks for Android app development. But I always introduce it by saying, if you squint hard enough, Swift and Kotlin are very similar. You know, there's, you know, var, you know, star equals a string, and there's, you know, top level functions is, you know, same sort of generics.
Function,
But I mean, you can really just sort of squint your eyes and it's like, oh, that could be one or the other. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of the idea behind the transpiler is we can, you know, take these Swift constructs and map them in many cases directly on top of Kotlin constructs. And then at a higher level for the user interface, again, if you squint hard enough at Swift UI and at a Jetpack Compose, you know, user interface, they kind of look the same. You know, you have that same sort of data-driven declarative component layout, you know, all in code, no interface builder, no XML files, you know, really the sort of the modern user interface approach. And you're like, wow, I could more or less take these two, you know, user interface components and they look almost identical. So we just need to basically take one and then map it onto the other. In the simple cases, then there gets to be really, you know, a lot more complex cases like dealing with advanced things like navigation, you know, container views, things like that. But yeah, the heart of it is really, you know, these are very similar languages. Like we would never really have been able to map Swift onto, you know, Java instead of Kotlin.
Right.
Or Swift UI onto, you know, the low-level Android XML views instead of Jetpack Compose. So it's really something whose time is now, you know, with the advance of these newer frameworks.
And so what do you think with, like, existing teams or existing apps? Like, how is it more realistic to start from a base project? Or is it really capable of converting an existing app over in terms of frameworks and things?
We recommend starting with a new project just because if you've developed an app over a period of time and you've never thought about running it on a different platform, you just tend to accumulate dependencies and things like that that are very iOS specific. In addition, there are, you know, certain things that Skip can't do, and it's very easy to sort of work around those patterns if you start from scratch. But once they're entrenched, sometimes it's hard to change them. We are, you know, we have a new preview out for, instead of transpiling Swift to Kotlin, compiling Swift on Android. And that's something we're putting a lot of effort behind. And that has more potential for letting you reuse a lot more existing code. So it'll be easier to port existing apps, at least at the model layer right now. We just, you know, have had a really sort of announcement that we're tracking close to 2,000 Swift packages out there that now compile for Android. And we've, you know, given instructions for how to make, you know, increase that number by a lot. There's usually pretty simple to get something sort of model level compiling and working on Android. So, yeah, so we see a lot of potential there. But for now, we do recommend starting with a new project.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I mean, like, you know, like I said before at the beginning, I did start learning Kotlin. And then Apple came out with Swift UI, and my attention completely got turned away, right? So, but I was making good progress with Kotlin, because the dream for me has always been, I've got a bunch of apps that were written back in the day that I've always wanted to make an Android version. But I actually have a purpose now with this latest project I'm working on. You know, it's going to be used in an international market, and you know, I know enough about the mobile that we cannot not have, you know, as like I say, I don't want to punish the Android users for their bad life choices, but, you know, you know, so if in a business world, you want to basically support as many users as you can, right? Practically.
Yeah, I mean, you want to, you know, as you say, especially in an international context, you know, estimates are between 70 and 75% of all smartphones out there are Android. So that's a huge population. On the flip side, in terms of the amount of, you know, profitability from apps, it's reverse. They always say that, you know, 70 or 75% goes to the iOS, you know, iOS side, which is one of the reasons why very often people just start with iOS and then wind up to just only support iOS, because the notion of having to expand the platforms is really overwhelming. But yeah, I mean, there are many apps, you know, you want to be able to reach the whole world. And that's really, you know, one of the areas where we really emphasize that, you know, both reaching all devices, but also with good built-in localization support, where you can support, you know, a lot of languages easily using just a single, you know, Xcode translation, you know, XC strings file. So that's, you know, sort of reaching the entire universe of mobile app users is really a core focus that we've been working on.
That goes for accessibility as well. That's something that gets overlooked a lot.
I was going to ask actually about that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, taking advantage of the native UI frameworks on both platforms just sort of gives us a lot of the accessibility for free, and that's often missing from these other cross-platform tools that just don't have the time to emphasize that.
Yeah, no, it's a huge, huge question. Always a big question for me is accessibility. But the other one is unit testing. So how do you guys approach that?
The unit testing is pretty cool, actually. Sort of one of a lesser sung feature, but a big pride point for us is what we do is we take your XC test unit tests as part of, you know, a Swift Package Manager module, and just like your core code, we also transpile those. And, you know, just sort of like the Swift UI winds up being overlaid on Jetpack Compose, on Android, the XC test winds up being overlaid onto JUnit, which is sort of the granddaddy of all unit testing frameworks in the Java world. And so you wind up being able to run those unit tests for what we call parity tests to make sure that, you know, say your business logic behaves exactly the same. It runs it once on, you know, either macOS or against iOS, and then runs the same unit test against a local Java Android simulation environment, which is called RoboElectric. A little bit of inside baseball, or alternatively on the Android emulator or device if you're running in online mode. And these unit tests are used by all of our frameworks, you know, from the, you know, Skip UI and Skip Foundation frameworks that emulate the Apple, you know, frameworks, as well as all of our, you know, external frameworks like Skip SQL and things like that. And those are run, you know, online on, you know, GitHub Actions as a result of every pull request and every commit. So we can always be absolutely positive that the behavior is identical on both platforms. And this would have really been an impossible project without some support for being able to take this unit test and be able to use them side by side. Because, you know, again, sort of like having to write an app twice, you don't want to have to write your unit tests, you know, from scratch twice in two different languages and two different test environments.
Yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, like I think in the enterprise or even big business world, you probably wouldn't get far without a product that couldn't be tested, because they have all their compliance rules and they have their software testing after the fact and, you know, reports and things before they even push the release button, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. I did have another question. I've just lost it now. Oh, yeah. Well, I'm thinking, can you think of anything cool that we may have not, I mean, we've talked about accessibility, talked about frameworks, What am I missing? Like in terms of like what's really, really cool about something that we haven't touched on yet.
Well, Abel, you know, alluded to it initially a little bit with the Skip native integration, but the ability to have native code that is running, you know, both with direct interaction on iOS or via what they call JNI on Android, you know. Android applications are written in Kotlin or Java, and they all run on a JVM, and all of the Android APIs are Java APIs. So no matter how you do things, you need to be aware of Java and you need to talk to it. But they do have the ability to create native code in order to run. It's a little bit more complicated than iOS, where everything is native, because you need to somehow bridge down into that native code. But yeah, sort of the genesis of some of our work on bringing native Swift to Android via the Swift toolchain is that earlier we had implemented the ability to just drop in C into your project and be able to interact with that. And that's how we implement like Skip SQL. That's on top of that's not using the Java SQLite APIs. It's actually using one of our frameworks called Skip FFI to speak directly to the SQLite C API. So you have exact parity of the capabilities you have on both sides to be able to have very high performance interaction with the lower level C code. And that opens up the door to having, you know, the Android app have unprecedented performance and also memory management, because, you know, a lot of these things are Java and Kotlin running on Android. You have the overhead of garbage collection. You have, you know, a very high memory watermark compared to the iOS equivalent. But the more that you can write in native code, the more efficient it's going to wind up being, because it will use, you know, immediate allocation, deallocation, and you'll have that sort of predictable deterministic memory management where you are able to have, you know, a much higher performance experience than you would if you were doing it all in Java.
Cool. Yeah, that's good stuff. I'm glad you talked about the memory stuff, because I had a Slack message from one of my friends who's found out I was telling him I was going to interview you guys today, but he was mentioning about leaks and things. But so what are the nuts and bolts for somebody who wants to get into Skip? I mean, obviously you have a trial, but I mean, where do we go with this? Like, what if we want to get serious about building projects with Skip? What do people need to do? What do you need to know?
Yeah. Basically, you'll be able to use your existing development skills, and in terms of like the licensing and all that, we have various options. First of all, you can just download it and start using it like as a free trial. There'll be a period where there's no license or anything required. You can just want you to be able to experiment. Beyond that, you can get an evaluation license that'll last a month. And then beyond that, we have various options. We have one for indies that's super popular that lets you go ahead and publish an app to the App Store. One closed source app or unlimited open source apps if you're willing to sort of keep your source out there. And that's all free. So you can just take that run with it and see if Skip is the right fit for you basically throughout, you know, the lifecycle of an entire project. If you want to go publish multiple apps, depending on sort of your business model and all that, there's a small business license and then there's a professional license. And the details for all those things are on our website. I think the small business license, Mark, what's the pricing? I don't remember offhand.
I think it's $99 per year.
That's reasonable.
Yeah, it's definitely not unreasonable for targeting an entire other platform with your, you know, existing Swift and Swift UI knowledge.
And what do people need to know? Like, I mean, do they, beyond, once we've got the apps in our, or the APK and the IPA file in our hands, what is there? Is there anything particularly different about getting it up on the App Store or on Google Play? Like,
yeah, I mean, you have to go through, you know, there's sort of a parallel world. You squint hard enough at App Store Connect and you wind up with the Google Play Store console. And that is a, you know, whole world unto itself. They have a lot of checkboxes you have to check and a lot of forms to fill out and, you know, processes to go through. And that's unfortunately an area where we can only help you so much. You know, we give you the APK, and then you sort of take it from there. It is an area that we've, you know, wind up helping people out on our Slack channel and on our forums and things like that. And we also recently implemented sort of a scaffold of Fastlane support. Mm-hmm. In case any listeners are not familiar, Fastlane has kind of evolved as a de facto way of performing continuous delivery of, you know, new versions of iOS and Android apps. Essentially, you know, you go into your iOS project directory and you type Fastlane release, It'll, you know, build it, bundle it up. It'll upload any, you know, metadata files that you have locally, screenshots and things like that, and basically let you issue a single command to go soup to nuts, build my app, release it as a new version. Android side has the same sort of thing. So now when you create a new skip project using the skip init command for a new application, it will automatically create the framework of both an iOS and an Android Fastlane set of configuration files that you customize for your needs. You know, you'll need to fill in the description, the various, you know, age rating, you know, JSON files and things like that. You'll need to get your screenshots, but you sort of have a starting point. So, and this is how we distribute our Showcase application. We have an app called the Skip Showcase, which is available on iOS and on Android, which is great because it goes over almost all of our user interface components. And you know, you can see them side by side. You can see, okay, this is how a slider looks on iOS, this is how a slider looks on Android. And it's really useful for people evaluating Skip to be like, okay, what does user interface really feel like side by side? So that's really one of the core applications that we have. And we put in Fastlane support for that. So now I can just type, actually, not only Fastlane support, but also integrated to the GitHub action. So now I just tag a new release of the showcase, and it automatically you know, builds and runs through all the test cases, creates a new release, and uploads one to the App Store, another to the Play Store, and submits it for review. So yeah, so I, you know, sometimes I just cut a new release for fun just to see how long it's going to take. And it's gotten so, you know, often it will, by the end of the day, they'll be available up on the App Stores.
And cool. just to add a bit of color, it's been very interesting getting experience submitting to the Play Store, not only ourselves, but hearing from users and seeing that there are just as many problems and controversies and so forth in the Google world as there are in the Apple world.
I can imagine, yeah. Yeah, we used to have, at the enterprise, we had a whole team that just dealt with the two platforms. Like, they had one, so they always pulling their out. Right, kind of thing. Mind you, I do all my stuff myself, so I'm familiar with the iOS side and the challenges there. And I've also worked quite a bit with Fastlane, and you're reminding me, Mark, that I probably should go and pay a bit more attention, even with my own releases, right? You know, like it's like the shoemaker's children. He's got the worst shoes, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's me.
I wanted to mention on the showcase side, too, it's not just like, you know, you see a slider. It's like, you see a slider with like eight different configurations, you know, tint colors and foreground styles and just all these things. And I just wanted to mention that that's been, you know, that's immensely useful for us and our users. It's a good way that we exercise our own components, but it's something I've always at every job encouraged them to do as well. It's really hard to test UI components. You know, you said unit tests are sort of integral to products, and I agree, but UI tests, you know, not so much. They're very difficult to maintain. They just, I've had bad experiences with them. I think a lot of people have, but having like this sort of playground model where for any sort of custom UI you develop, you have somewhere you can go to exercise those components, you know, comprehensively, so that when you do change them inevitably down the road because you want to add a feature or tweak something, you can go there and see, you know, did I break anything? You know, how is it behaving now?
Right.
Like, I always advise people to make those things, and certainly it's an integral part of what we do on the UI side.
Yeah, I was going to ask about UI testing too, but I was afraid to actually. But I do want to talk about the design side, because it's obviously I have a graphics background too, and you know, obviously I've been using a lot of SF Symbols lately because it's, you know, they're right there in front of you. And I think in your little demo video, you talk about how to translate things like that over from one platform to the other. Can you maybe give us a bit of background on that?
Yeah, so, you know, in general, we try to support as much of kind of the iOS idioms on the, you know, Android side as possible, just because that's what iOS developers are used to, and it's what the tooling supports and things like that. So, for example, with localization, I'd mentioned previously, we support the new XC strings, localization translation catalog, which is fantastic because that's maintained by Xcode. So you put in a SwiftUI text, you know, hello world, that'll automatically get added to that, and then you can add in your, you know, French and Italian translations and things like that. Similarly, for image support and for symbols and things like that, we support the asset catalogs. And, you know, what we wind up doing is we wind up processing these during the, you know, sort of transpilation stage with our, you know, skip plugin. You know, the skip plugin doesn't just take your Swift code and turn it into Kotlin code. It also takes your build system, you know, the Swift PM build system, and it turns it into the build system for Android and Kotlin, which is called Gradle. And we also provide an equivalent of the asset translation, you know, mechanisms. So while, you know, Xcode will take your, you know, system images and symbol and custom symbols and things like that and package them in the right way for iOS, we do the same sort of processing and package them into your APK and then access those at runtime. Now, specifically for system symbols, you know, one of the differences between, you know, iOS and Android applications are that iOS applications typically access the global system installed, you know, frameworks like, you know, Swift UI is on every, you know, iOS device. You don't need to bundle it with your application. The system symbols are installed on, you know, iOS. You don't need to, you know, bundle those individually. The Android Jetpack Compose is actually external frameworks that wind up being built into your APK. They wind up being kind of thinned down depending on how you use it, but it is not something that's provided with the Android operating system, but instead is built into the actual application that you ship, which is nice because it can back deploy many more versions earlier on Android devices than iOS. And so for system symbols, to get to your actual question, what you would do is you would export your system symbols either from the SF Symbols app itself or one of the, for example, the Google font symbols catalog, which is online. You can download these, you know, equivalent iOS symbol files, and you just drop those into your asset catalog, and then, you know, you reference that with a normal Swift UI, you know, image symbol name call, and it will look it up in the main bundle's, you know, asset catalog, and that will essentially render that that system symbol, which is encoded in SVG on Android.
So it's using on the iOS side, it uses the native comes with the OS, and then on the Android side, it creates an SVG of it, sort of idea?
Yes. Well, so you can do it either way. On iOS, you can opt to not bundle it, in which case you would need to basically branch. You'd say, okay, on iOS, use the system symbol for, you know, say campfire or something like that. And then on Android, you know, since it needs to be bundled with the application, you would need to reference that from your own asset catalog. You need to export it, include it with your app, and then reference it from your own asset catalog. So it is a little bit more work, but you can have the exact same symbol appearing in your application in both environments.
Yeah, I'm trying to think back to the days of working at the bank where we'd have to have an Android equivalent of a symbol of, not that we, it was before SF Symbols actually was out, but, and what about things like app icons and launch screens, things like that? Like, how are those kind of translatable as well, or?
Yeah, they are. They're not automatic right now, so you do need to drop it into the right, you know, location
folder, yeah,
in your Android directory. So yeah, when you first create a sort of a skip specific app project, it creates a Swift package manager package with your sources and your tests, just, you know, the standard Swift package manager. It also creates a Darwin folder with the Xcode project, and it also creates an Android folder with, you know, the Android specific configuration.
So I can drop like the icons in the Android side?
Exactly, okay. Right. And those icons will automatically be, you know, assembled, included in the right place with your APK. And then if you use Fastlane, it will be uploaded as the icons for your application.
Hmm.
Yeah, okay. We're sort of slowly creating more Android developers because our philosophy is, yeah, like you share the code as much as possible, but there's certain things where it's okay to just do it the iOS way for iOS and do it the Android way for Android.
Right. Yeah, it's pretty much like that with my Flutter experience too, was having to put assets into two separate locations, like, because they're different formats too, right? Right. Like, I can't remember if it was WebP or SVG or whatever for Android side, but different dimensions as well, right?
Yeah, different dimensions. It can be WebP, but it can also be PNG. So we just use the PNG version of the catalogs. And so, yeah, actually, if you'd run skip init to create a new application project, we do actually generate just sort of a blank, I think, a blue square icon, but in all of the right formats for each of iOS and for Android, for the two platforms. So at least you sort of have a starting point and essentially, okay, take your icon, turn it into the right, you know, the same shapes of this, and you'll have something that will be valid and you can ship it to the
There's also online sites I've used in the past. I mean, I have an art background, but I mean, it's such a pain to go into Photoshop and make 27 versions of the same thing and name them all correctly. But there are sites where you can upload your 1024 and it'll generate a package and you download as a zip. And I've actually done it. That app I was talking about in Flutter, I actually took the same icon and I got a package for Android and one for iOS as well. So,
yeah, that's actually, it's just on the Slack, someone was talking about a script that they use to basically take a single authoritative icon, I think it was a PDF icon, and then run a script on it that I uses Image Magic locally and just resizes it for each of the individual ones. So you can take your single icon, you can just run a single command, and it will update each of the, you know, dozen or so, you know, forms of that icon for each side of the project. That's something that I very much hope I can, in a weekend project, I can add it to the skip tool and be able to say, you know, skip regenerate icon, so that if you want to make like a little tweak to your icon's color or details or something, you don't have to go through this rigmarole of manually resizing it or even going through with these online tools. You still need to then take each individual one and put it in the right place, which is a hassle.
Yeah, there's also on the with Fastlane, you can do your screenshots using XCUI test, right? Mm-hmm. So you can probably do something like that, but outside of skip, that is, per se, right?
That's another area where I'd very much like to explore. The iOS side does, as you say, use XCUI test, and then the Android side, the equivalent for Android, it uses a whole separate framework of the equivalent kind of instrumentation on the Android emulator. And so I'd really love to be able to square that circle, so you could just say, run my unit tests, use the accessibility identifiers to tap around on buttons, grab a screenshot, because you can use that both for screenshot generation, but also for, you know, top high level user interface testing. So that's definitely something that that I hope to get to in the future.
Cool. I normally, I like to delve a little bit more into your personal backgrounds, but obviously we've been talking about skip the whole time. So why don't we switch over to the Tim questions, and then we can sort of get to know you each individually. You can answer them as a team or you can answer them individually. I've had two guests on at a time and going through this stuff. But as I said before, the questions are based on Marcel Proust, and we've sprinkled them in with some Colbert questions and some questions that I've come up with on my own too. So if you're ready, if you're seated comfortably, we can start.
Let's go for it.
All right. So the first question is, what is your motto? What's your elevator pitch for yourself personally, or maybe for Skip?
Oh, wow. personally, I'm just really trying to be a good dad, you know, a good husband. it's very separate from my professional life. And I think that's going to be sort of the thing I look back on and find the most important. Sure. So that's definitely my personal motto right now.
Well, not to be outdone, mine is as well. I'm trying to be a good dad. But on a professional standpoint, you know, my elevator pitch is that I really want to bring down the barrier to people being able to bring their work to a wide audience. You know, in this particular context, it's being able to enable creators to take, you know, their vision and their work and being able to provide it to the entire world, or at least the, you know, 5 billion plus people that have mobile phones and use them as one of their primary computing devices. And that's really been sort of my, you know, personal obsession lately, is how can we enable, you know, not just giant corporations, but, you know, a few individual people to be able to expand their vision out to the world without being overwhelmed with all these details about, you know, you need to know one language for one platform, one segment of the world, you need to know another language to reach another segment of the world. You know, how can we how can we provide the tools to facilitate them to create these things? Because I really do think that anything that hinders an individual's creativity for sharing their own work, you know, in the world, it's a noble endeavor to try to eliminate those barriers.
Sure, or help people with it. Yeah, for sure. Who are your heroes in real life?
I would say my personal hero is Benjamin Franklin.
Okay.
Because he was very much someone who just would take an idea and take a million ideas and be able to, you know, have something come out of it. And sometimes they were useless and sometimes they would change the world.
Cool. Abe?
I was trying to think of something that's not common or cliche or just something everyone would say. But I think maybe it is still appropriate, just given the date that we're recording this and the current sort of climate in the U.S. I could name someone like Martin Luther King, you know, someone who just fights for equality for everyone and acceptance of everyone right now.
Cool. All right. What's your favorite word?
I'm going to go with simple. I was trying to... So intuitive or simple, but yes, I like simplicity.
Okay. Mark?
I'll say 42.
42, okay, all right. Where would you most like to live?
Well, that's something my wife and I have discussed a lot recently. It's a difficult question. We have not come up with a good
nailed
answer.
Nailed it down. You got any top... three candidates or?
Canada has come up. Somewhere like Toronto would not be the worst place to be right now.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. We lived in, my wife has this dream of building something in like the English countryside, like a compound where we and our friends and our kids could all sort of be Sound of Music and play together and things like that.
Right. Any ideas, Mark?
Yeah, well, I love living in Boston, but my wife and I have always loved Paris as well. We've lived there on and off over the years, and so that's always been high on our list of places we might someday wind up living.
Cool. What is the best sandwich?
Ooh, I like pepperoni and honey mustard, or spicy mustard.
On kind of bread, or...
Just like white or like golden, you know, something, not too much whole wheat.
Cool. Mark, what's the best sandwich?
I like banh mi.
Mm. It's what's it?
A Vietnamese sandwich called banh mi.
Oh, okay. What's that? What's involved in that?
It's sort of bun-like, and it will have a vinegary... spread with sort of coleslaw on it, and then it can have a variety of different meats, but usually there's pork, and then we'll have jalapeno peppers, and then I think depending on who's making it, they might have a variety of different stuff like a sriracha mayonnaise kind of spread.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, I was going with stuff I could make at home, but banh mi is pretty solid.
Yeah, I can't make one at home, but I do whenever I have a chance, I get one.
All right. What's the one thing you own that you should really throw out?
I mean, we just have a lot. We've accumulated a lot over the last 10 years in this house. So I think there's plenty of like just older things, but I personally don't hold on to things. My wife would tell you the opposite. Mm. I just get rid of stuff as quickly as possible in terms of personal possessions.
I have a large wardrobe that consists mostly of very, very old shirts and pants with big holes in them that everyone always makes fun of, but I just cannot bring myself to throw away clothes that are still barely holding together.
Okay, cool. What's your favorite action movie?
When I was a kid, and I would not, I think, enjoy it so much today, but I loved RoboCop, actually.
Cool.
Boy, I might have to second RoboCop there. But I was also, you know, I guess it's not really an action movie, but I was just thinking with the recent passing of David Lynch, Wild at Heart, which has some action scenes in it.
I don't think I've seen that.
Well, here's another question I always ask anyway, but Star Wars, Star Trek, Doctor Who, or Babylon 5?
Star Wars.
Boy, you know, I can say, like, old Doctor Who or new Doctor Who, old Star Wars or new Star Wars, old Star Trek or new Star Trek. I would say, if I can only answer one...
Well, you can choose multiple, but you give me your rationale.
I'll go with Doctor Who, just for the variety of just crazy, off-the-wall, bonkers storylines that they had.
So is it the latest generation, the last five or six
doctors? No, like Tom Baker. Yeah, the old...
John Pertwee, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
I've been reading recently the Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy series to my daughter, which you may have guessed at, given my favorite word. And I was reading about all the Doctor Who storylines that Douglas Adams had written, some mm-hmm. of which were accepted and some of which weren't over the years. A lot of them were really, really funny.
Cool. What number am I thinking of?
17.
43. Nope. Close, but nope. What was your first concert?
I am not a music person, but when I was a young kid, my mom took me to Michael Jackson. And that's the only real concert I remember until, you know, college days and Dave Matthews and stuff like that. I know I did not like it. I think I spent most of the time like lying down with my hands over my ears.
Really? Yeah. I actually won a ticket to see Michael Jackson with the Jackson 5 when they did that, you know, the Pepsi tour. But I gave it to one of the girls. I was managing a restaurant at the time, and I gave it to one of the girls who would have enjoyed it more than I would have. But, you know, regrets, like, you know, you know, obviously if I'd known he wasn't going to last that long, I might have gone just for the experience. How about you, Mark?
My first concert was Joan Jett and the Blackhearts.
Oh, cool.
And opening for them was Till Tuesday.
Cool. All right. So here's some rapid fire ones. Flat or sparkling?
Sparkling.
What? Okay. Apples or oranges?
Oranges.
Window or aisle?
Aisle.
Oh. So, cats or dogs?
Dogs.
Okay. What's your favorite smell?
Just clean, like soap.
Soap, yeah.
Barbecue.
All right. We kind of touched this, I think. Who are your favorite writers?
I, does that have to be the person or the book? So one of my favorite books is Ender's Game, but the writer, Orson Scott Card, has some pretty messed up views on things. So I would very much want to separate those two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That seems to be a pretty common theme these days, separating the art from the artist, right?
I would say, boy, it's tough. In recent years, I've read a lot of books by Robert Harris, who wrote a series that I really love about Cicero called Imperium, and then a couple more on that. So I'll say that, at least for right now, that's my favorite author.
Okay. What's the most used app on your iPhone?
I mean, probably just messages.
There is an app you can look on your phone to see screen time.
Oh, like actual time?
Well, just what do you think? What do you, I guess, where you think you spend your time? Yeah, mostly.
I have tried to stop using most social media and things mm-hmm. other than posting about Skip. So yeah, I definitely try to stay off of it, except for messages with people I know.
Cool.
I think mine is probably, in terms of just number of hours used, is NetNewsWire, the free RSS reader, because that's how I get almost all of my quote-unquote news.
Cool. All right. Well, we can wrap it up here. So I always like to wrap up with, like, can you tell people how to get a hold of you and what you're working on? Anything interesting you're working on next that you can tell us about?
Yeah, so actually our contact information, or at least where you follow Skip, is in the footer of our website. So we have a Mastodon account. I think it's just Skip Tools. My personal Twitter account I still follow and post to about Skip. And that's Abe White, all one word. Otherwise, our emails or addresses are there. And that's, yeah, generally the best way to get hold of me. And definitely appreciate anytime someone sends feedback or suggestions or anything about Skip.
Yeah, and same for me. Mark@skip.tools, but also the other contact formats at, you know, skip.tools, especially the Slack channel. We definitely want more and more people to join the Slack channel, and you can always, you know, message me directly through that forum as well with any questions or feedback.
Cool. And you guys coming over to Blue Sky at some point, or?
I have not. I don't know. You know, we'll see if it, we need to sort of just professionally, but on a personal level, I doubt it.
I have a Blue Sky account that I've started using for following people. I post to it as much as I've ever posted any other social media, which is basically none, except for LinkedIn. I actually do occasionally post on LinkedIn.
Okay, good. Good to know. Yeah, no, it's amazing in the last couple of months, Blue Sky's taken off. I have like more users, more followers now than I had on Twitter in 15 years on Twitter.
That's amazing.
I have to say, with my limited experience with Blue Sky, it is just incredibly refreshing to not have algorithmic promoted things. You can actually follow a sequence of people and see the most recent things that they posted.
Yeah, it's kind of like Twitter used to be back in the early days.
It is totally like early Twitter. Yeah, that's my experience. Sure.
Well, my name is Tim Mitra, TimMitra on Blue Sky, on Mastodon, on most things, Instagram, things like that. And of course, you can probably find me on LinkedIn, but not under that handle. So until next time, we'll see you in the future. Bye.
This has been another episode of the More Than Just Code podcast. If you want to find out more about the show, you can visit the More Than Just Code website at morethanjustcode.com. There you can find a summary and show notes of each episode. We list links to the apps, code, and news that we mentioned on the show. If you like the podcast, tell your friends, leave a comment on the website, or write a review on iTunes. And please recommend us in your favorite podcatcher. All of these things help others find out about the show. We really appreciate your help with spreading the word. We'd love to hear from you, so use the hashtag AskMTJC and we may mention you on the show. Friends of the show can also join us on the podcast Slack channel. Please consider supporting the show by pledging any amount on patreon.com/MTJC. Every dollar pledged helps a lot. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.
I've been having trouble with my Swift package manager lately. Like, I'm on a new M4 machine, and I can't recall if, like, I migrated over in November, I think, but I can't remember if I have always had this issue with Swift package manager. So when I ran Skip Tools install things through Homebrew, I get an error on the last two on the check thing. You know, the Swift checkup or Skip checkup. Mm-hmm. That said, so I do have a couple of other machines. So I tried it on the other machines to just get the sample project going and you know, pushed it up to Git and then pulled it down. And I realized that the package is actually getting created for me. It's just that something about it's not happy, but it is making the package, but I can, and so I can run the app on the machine that's having trouble. But I do see an error that I don't know if you guys are interested in seeing when I'm running Skip install or Skip checkup. I can send it over to you. Something about not being able to write to, I think, the temporary folder that it writes the packages into or something.
Sometimes it will say, like, it's not there, and it's because some earlier error just failed to sort of create the right environment. And there's a log that it Skip checkup will reference. It'll say, like, you know, check this, you know, whatever.
Yeah, yeah. I went through the text file that puts out, but there's way too much stuff in there.
I was going to say you could send it to us and we could take a look at, and find the more detailed error message in there.
Yeah, but I wanted to make sure you understood that I am having trouble with Swift Package Manager on this machine. Like sometimes I can't pull a new package in, but I can go if I go to another machine and then pull it in. And then once the package is in the project, I'm fine, you know. But
we found that just getting... Sometimes that's the biggest stumbling block for people generally to try it is like just getting the Android, you know, environment set up.
Yeah.
Like, maybe on your end it's Swift Package Manager, but that has, we've rarely seen an issue with Swift Package Manager. It's usually just getting, making sure the right Java version is there and the right, you know, Gradle's got all its dependencies. And just there's so many things that it's trying to do for you. And they're just sort of normal parts of trying to get an Android thing going. It's not really skip specific, but you know, we still have to sort of take responsibility and try to make that easy for people.
Yeah, it's good actually that you do open up the, or have them run the APK or run the virtual machine beforehand. Having done some Android development, it's good that you got that going, and so that when they do the initial build, they actually do get to see the, you know, where the rubber meets the road, as I like to say, right? So
yeah, we definitely want that like out of box thing happening right away. In order to get people to be iterating on these things, partly just for like support reasons. Like there are some things that we don't, you know, there's some SwiftUI that we don't support right now, and better you find out early, you know, right away, than, you know, you run into it down the road. And similarly with the skip checkup, that's a really important, a key thing. We kind of have an ulterior motive for doing that. What it winds up doing is actually creating a little standalone template application and doing sort of the soup to nuts building of it. And one of the things that does is it sort of hydrates the Gradle cache. In order to, you know, build these things, Gradle needs to download quite a lot of dependencies. Like it winds up being about, you know, if you look at the size of your home/.gradle, you know, folder, it'll wind up being like around a gigabyte just from a fresh, you know, skip install. And much better people do that upfront when installing skip than having it happen, you know, as a side effect of building and running the application, because it'll be like, skip takes like 10 minutes to, you know, build the app, which is not true. Like once everything is cached, your app should be up on the screen within, you know, a couple seconds rather than a long time. But yeah, so if you are running into problems with skip checkup, definitely, you know, send us the log file. You can just mail it to support@skip.tools. No,
I'll join your Slack channel and dump it in there or something.
Yeah, or on the Slack channel. Because we would be interested. You say it's definitely a Swift Package Manager related thing, because usually it is a Gradle problem. Often it's a network hiccup. Something gets sort of miscached and then the whole thing winds up being corrupt and you have to clobber your Gradle folder. But there could be, you know, there is a Swift Package Manager configuration on your computer at home library or .swift.swift.pm. It could be that there's something got misconfigured somehow in there and is messing things up. That would explain why like Swift Package Manager on the command line might fail, but in Xcode might succeed, because Xcode's own Swift Package Manager sort of takes a divergent.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, like I've been having, it's mostly in Xcode that I'm doing this with package, like just trying to, like in a, not a Skift project, but just a regular project, putting, you know, trying to put a package in from GitHub and having trouble with it. And one thing I've also found was a really weird bug, but if I have my Bitbucket account and my GitHub account configured in Xcode, it won't even find the packages on GitHub. Something that Atlassian side is doing is blocking the discovery. So I had to remove the Bitbucket account. It took me, you know, days to figure this out. Removing that account from Xcode, and then all of a sudden stuff works, right?
Oh wow!
But I definitely am on this particular machine, and I'm not sure if it's because I migrated my account over from my M1. To here, and there's maybe some gremlins in the system, in the library somewhere, but because I've gone through deleting the Swift, you know, .org caches, and like I have like 5 or 6, you know, saved lines in my terminal to clear everything out. The only thing I can think of other than that is to completely remove Xcode and all traces of it on my machine and start with a fresh install, right? So
Yeah, Mark has way more patience and with these sorts of issues than me. That's why he's our tooling guy, because I'm just like, it's the most frustrating thing in the world for me.
Well, you know, having played with Cocoa Pods and Swift packages and over the years, and I was involved with the team that did the deployments of the apps at the bank. We had like framework things and Fastlane and Open Bakery, and it was always, you know, I was looking at some Unix command line to try and figure out what's going on, you know.
So, I mean, there's 100 ways things can fail and only one way this can succeed. It's sort of a miracle that anything winds up working, especially when you get this amount of complexity.
Well, I wrote a Swift data course for Codico, and the challenge for me with that was, because I was like writing, I'm like one of the first people to write a tutorial about it, and it was quite extensive, but I got really good at figuring out Swift previews, because there's so many different ways to break the preview, right? And there were so many different styles of previewing that you can use in the Canvas preview, right? So I even wrote some previews for your sample project here, because it was just like trying to dissect it a bit, right?
Yeah. Unfortunately, there's some problems with previews right now with Skip that I have a Apple technical support incident open about right now, which is where if you have a preview, it actually runs the launch script for your Android application.
Right.
Yeah, and there used to be a way, it's environment variable basically, to check, am I running in a preview? And if so, then we just wouldn't like try to, you know, build the transpiled code and launch it. And they got rid of that. So now there's no way to run a preview unless you actually disable, you know, the Skip build script in your build phases.
Cool.
It's a pretty big problem right now. I'm hoping that Apple will get back to me about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for your time, guys. It's been great to meet you. And I, you know, I'm excited for the project only because I actually have a need for it right now. You know, so great to meet you.
Yeah. I mean, we think everyone does have a need for it. And so that's really, you know, as you mentioned, this is a holy grail to be able to, you know, write in one place, maintain the premium user experience on both platforms, and not have to, really encumber your project with, you know, any of these external embedded cross-platform frameworks. So thank you so much for having us.
I do actually have one question I'm going to put into the show. So in your tutorials and stuff, you reach out asking for people to contribute to Skip. Like, how can people get involved with helping the project build?
Yeah, there's a section of our documentation called contributing, and it'll sort of outline the steps that you need to sort of iterate on our local libraries. And like I mentioned, like, we have seen some really cool contributions lately. I didn't mention some of the more recent ones to like Swift UI, but or Skip UI, our equivalent. Like, a user contributed most of the focus state implementation just recently, so now we can support focus state, which we hadn't had before, and that was really cool. Again, support on Android. Like, you could always do this stuff for your iOS part, but you'd have to sort of exclude it from the Android part and manage that yourself. But now that works. And like tab views with the page style, instead of just, you know, normal tab views, the sort of paging style was something we hadn't had, and someone contributed that. So yeah, I mean, it's actually fairly simple to get up and running. You create an Xcode workspace, you add your, you know, Skip library you want to contribute to, as well as your own project or showcase app if you're doing UI, or, you know, whatever, something to exercise it, and just start iterating, and then give us a pull request, and we'll get it in.
Cool. All right. Well, again, thanks for your time.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Okay. We'll see you guys.
Yeah,
see you guys
you
around.
Very much.
Sure. Okay.
Yeah. Definitely.